On this episode of What's What, the legacy of Leary and Das, New Age spirituality and the modern psychedelic movement.
Hello and welcome to What's What. I'm Chris Syracuse.
And I'm Ruchi Krishna.
Hello, Ruchi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's been a while.
Yep, as usual. As usual. We'll get it. We're going to get consistent with it one of these days. So We have a lot of stuff going on. Ruchi's like in a little bit of pain. So I appreciate you sticking it out and being here.
Yeah.
So we've got part two of Leary and Das, their legacy. Last time we talked about the backstory, and we talked about kind of the foundation of all of this. And today we want to talk about legacy. We want to talk about the modern spiritual movement. We want to talk about Ubudians, cults, all that stuff that sprang out of the 60s and the 70s. Mm-hmm. So first, do you want to start with that clip from Leary talking about Turn It On, or did you want to play that one at the end? I forget what we talked about.
I think we can start off there.
Yeah. The one about turning on.
Yep.
What he means. So this is.
So we're going to talk about Turn On, Tune In, and Drop Out, which was Timothy Leary's slogan, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it was really misunderstood.
It was misunderstood. Yeah. And that's why I want to play the clip so that mm-hmm. people are clear about what he actually meant. But for people that maybe haven't heard episode one of this little series within a series, we left the story at Ram Dass and Timothy Leary parting ways. Leary took this very like kind of hardcore counterculture, you know, American outlaw.
Political.
Yeah, exactly. Political dissident. And Ram Dass went to India and found a guru and became and transitioned from Richard Alpert to Ram Dass into the spiritual leader. And that's kind of where we left it. So this is like late 60s, early 70s, kind of that time period there. So this clip we're going to play, this is Timothy Leary talking at UCLA in 1967. So really at the height of a lot of this.
You know, and a very, very prestigious institution.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, a lot of the universities at that time and to this day are very open to these counterculture ideas. That's where a lot of the counterculture ideas really emerged. Mm-hmm. Places like Berkeley. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. So let's play this clip so we get some clarification, like you were saying, on what Leary meant with his very famous turn on, tune in, drop out slogan. So here we go. This is Timothy Leary, UCLA, 1967.
The religious search is the process of turning on. You have to turn on. Now, after you've turned on, what do? You have to express it. You have to live it out. When you've contacted the divine process within, you'll discover to your astonishment that God is not, as you may have been told, a man who lived in the past and died.
So it was actually kind of surprising to me when I first heard it, because I guess as it seems now, I didn't think about turning on, tuning in, dropping out as a religious pursuit, the way that he put it. But now hearing him say it, thinking about it, of course it is, right? Of course there's going to be a spiritual element to this whole reorganization of society and rethinking how things work. So I don't know.
Was step one, right? So turning on is waking up, right? Effectively making the decision that you want to look for a higher meaning, purpose.
Yeah.
Well, we can also just realize now and take a minute and just realize how many people in our current world are not in that phase, even, you know.
Yeah, they're not in woke phase, you know, to use overused term.
Most people are kind of in their daily grind, and that was how it was back then too. So he's got the call to turn on. Then he's asking you to tune in. So that is maybe taking the steps and working on that, maybe doing some meditation. Well, really, tapping into those higher frequencies.
Well, yeah, I think that's it.
Psychedelics.
Tuning in, yeah. Well, Yeah, exactly. Like really, really honing in on what that signal is and defining your own relationship with it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so interesting because
what is God, right?
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. It's not what you think it is. It's not a man who's died in the past. You're going to start to realize that God is rhythms. God is frequencies. God is wavelengths, you know, how we communicate, how we just radiate into people and so on. So I think that's tuning in, right? Yeah.
I'd say that's accurate. Yeah.
And then you got dropping out. And I think that's the one that scared everyone and where we say he was really misunderstood. Because dropping out in cultural context is, you know, dropping out of school,
right?
Like dropping out of college.
Right.
And that was, I think, how that was understood by the masses. And really what he's trying to say is, yeah, reorganize, think, question, you know, question
yeah.
things about our society. Live differently, live a more sustainable lifestyle, you know, be more self-sufficient. The other, like Terrence McKenna was huge into like indigenous cultures and foraging and living off the land and living in these regenerative ecosystems like Buckminster Fuller, you know, like this is the point of dropping out of our current society to build a new one, not to drop out and be a degenerate.
Right.
And that was, I think, kind of where the slogan was demonized.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And to be fair to the people that heard that, because I think he said it sometime the first time in public in the mid-60s, I think. There's a famous, I think he was testifying in front of Congress and he said it. And to be fair to the people that heard it in whatever year that was, let's say mid-60s, I can understand why they would be terrified. Because you're right, he wasn't saying it as, oh, go drop out and be a degenerate. But he was still saying something that was very dangerous to the powers that be.
And still is.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's why the powers that be have a vested interest in keeping us asleep, so to speak.
So what happened next? So now we're in the late... 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, so this
is. Had a major turning point that shifted our whole culture and society around the whole globe.
Yeah, yeah, it was a global movement for sure, or an extension of a global movement.
We're talking about the war on drugs.
Okay, so 1967, that's when he gave that speech in UCLA.
Kind of his traveling time. Yeah, he was lecturing in a lot of places and doing talks all over the country.
Right. And then 1971, Richard Nixon comes out with a very famous press conference where he basically coined the term war on drugs. And I think it's safe to say that it was a direct counter to people like Leary and the revolution that he started around psychedelics. Richard Nixon is famous for his distaste and like hatred of hippies and the hippie movement because it represented a direct threat for exactly the reasons that we talked about on the show before, reasons that we talked about in last episode. And so from there, it just kind of got worse. Like the government kind of doubled down.
Yeah, on, I think everything got became class A substances.
Right. Yeah, that's when a lot of it really
and
changed.
They had the right. I mean, LSD, there was no laws around it, you know, before that. So you could just have it and hand it out. And then when you start putting the laws around the ownership and the trafficking and possession is when you are able to start, you know, putting people in jail for it, which is what the next kind of three decades have shown.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that was the point. The point was intellectual, spiritual oppression, basically, to tell people what they could and couldn't believe about the world. And the more that we talk about this stuff, the more I realize like why at the beginning of this show, when we first brainstorming, we always like talked about the main theme being a resistance to industrialization. Because the more we talk about this stuff, the more that seems to be at the heart of it. Different characters in these stories have different specific interests, but most of them, their interest is to protect whatever large-scale system that, at least in our time, has been a product of industrialization.
Yeah.
Keeping that intact, making sure there's very little local control, local producing of food, local producing of energy, local governance, to make sure that that is stifled. Any?
Well, this sounds very similar to the plot of Island, which brings us full circle.
Full circle. What's what?
Which is, of course, the book in which this podcast is based off. Aldous Huxley's Island, for any of our new visitors or listeners. So I think it is that counterplay that is going on in our, I don't know if it's our universe or if it's just our ecosystem that we're in, which is this kind of male versus female attitude. I mean, you know, it's the male, we call it that because let's call it maybe like a positive and a negative force instead. And or we can call the an male aggressive, the positive force.
Well, I don't know. Well, that's an interesting way to put it because in some context, that like domination of nature and that exploitation of resources is a positive thing for the species.
Well, you need to have a positive and like it's a magnetic field. That's what keeps the rhythm of the universe going. It's a void which then gets filled.
It's a great way to put it because that metaphorically that it works.
What is the energy that keeps things turning? Yeah. You know, it's the thing, the night and the day. It's the hot and the cold. It's the forces that make the currents, you know, are based on hot and cold, and wind is a void being filled by something spaceless. And so this is kind of this, and you can then look at it in our society and say, yes, there will be an aggressor side and there will be a passive side. And I think where we get stuck in Island is how does the passive side win, you know, or do they just,
it's kind of a paradox, isn't it? Because I think that was aggressive and passive, I think are even better words to use to describe it. You said positive and negative, which kind of makes sense in some context, but if you're saying male and female, masculine and feminine, and all the other different forms that takes, I think aggressive and passive is a really good way to put it. Because aggressive can...
Or yin and yang.
Or yin and yang, yeah, exactly. And most people, if they're familiar with these concepts of yin and yang or balance, masculine and feminine, they'll understand. I think we all understand intuitively what is meant when we say that. The question is, and what you're getting at, is that can we either reach some nice equilibrium between the two, or where it actually, like you said, the passive force wins, and that's the dominant. But it's a paradox, right? Because the passive force can never be the dominant one or the aggressive one, because that's not the role in the universe.
Exactly.
So I guess the best we can hope for is an equilibrium between the two.
Yep.
And what you're saying, and what we've talked about many times, and this is like the core of the show, is that for however long over the course of history, there have been times where the masculine aggressive energy has gotten so out of control that it dominates everything and it stifles a lot of things and it destroys a lot of things. And that may be where we're at in some ways with this overly industrial, now very technical, very IT-centered mindset, this data mindset that is really exerting another level of control in our lives that we've never really seen before. And that's kind of where we're at now, the continued fight that started with people like Leary and Doss. I mean, not even started in this current century, that's where it started, or the last century rather. But yeah, it's fascinating when you say it like that.
I think we got that really great clip from Terrence McKenna. I think that fits in so good here because
you want to listen to it,
basically explaining what went wrong? Why didn't the revolution cause the revolution?
Yeah, let's play it. So this is, to give people context here, this is Ram Dass and Terence McKenna at some conference in Prague in, I want to say it was 1994. So people know who Terence McKenna is. We talked about him before on this podcast. We did an episode on him. Yeah, I think two or like one and a half. but for people who don't know, he's often known as the Timothy Leary of the 90s. So he's carrying the torch for a lot of this psychedelic revolution of consciousness stuff that was continuing into the 90s and the 2000s and into today. So this is Ram Dass and Terence McKenna sitting down at some conference, spiritual psychedelic conference in Prague in 1994. And like Rushi was saying, they're talking about what happened in the 60s and 70s, and why didn't the revolution continue?
Well, I was asking you, what did we do wrong in the 60s?
Yeah, okay.
One thing that has occurred to me, and I certainly felt it with my friends, was we assumed it would go on forever. We had no notion of window of opportunity.
Yes.
We just thought we'd blown the doors off the hinges and they would never be put back on.
Yeah.
To me, the most amazing transformation in my lifetime is not the revolution of the 60s, but the counter-revolution of the 70s, where they managed to put the cuckoo clock back together again, even though we'd kicked it all over.
Did they or didn't they? That's what I'm... See, you keep thinking there was that opportunity and it closed, and I think it happened then. And all of the 70s and 80s, all that was this kind of reverberation to this process. And that I'm here, and you're here, and we're both still here, and it's the 90s, and I got a lot of people that, I talk now in middle America, and I look at my audiences, and they've never taken dope, they've never read Eastern holy books or anything, and I just say the same stuff I was saying in the 60s that I was saying to people with flowers and big pupils, and these people in the middle, they're corseted, nice people. And they're going, and I think, far out, look, it happened. And I was looking the other way.
So good. That's so good.
Yeah, it's a good debate between them. Ram Dass seems to think that the work, the vibration has been made. You know, those shockwaves have gone out.
Exactly.
Society.
Which is such a great visual, I think. The reverberation is what he said. But yeah, it's a shockwave throughout society. And it takes a while sometimes.
I mean, you look at how influential things that happened, like Woodstock and stuff, are even now.
Well, exactly.
To our society.
Yes. And I think this gets us, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're looking at the outline right now. It's kind of hard for me to turn around. But I think this gets us to the next segment and what we want to talk about. Like, where are we now? We're kind of 20 or 30 years now into this new age spirituality, which was a mix of the counterculture, psychedelic stuff that was going on and the new age spiritual stuff that was going on in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of not so nice stuff came out of that. A lot of the cults, we associate some of the really darkest cults.
Osho's.
Yeah. Jim Jones. People's Temple. I mean, in the 90s, it's a little bit different, but Waco.
But they all had a very quasi kind of religious, spiritual agenda, which was able to lure people in. Unfortunately, a lot of them had really dramatic and kind of devastating outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these communities. A lot of them became very power hungry communities where the leader was taking advantage of certain situations, taking advantage of people either financially or
sexually.
But we were kind of discussing that maybe had they not had to kind of drop out so far from society, would this have really happened if there was a way for you to integrate kind of this new knowledge and this open-mindedness and still be part of normal society. It kind of seemed like during those decades, maybe that wasn't possible. You were kind of in two camps.
It's a really good point. And yeah, we'll keep going.
It's worth addressing.
It is worth addressing. I think it's a really good question because if we look at our lives now, the reason I don't live in America anymore is very, very similar.
Can you even do it now?
Well, it is. So the question is, can you exist in these little bubbles within some larger society where you do things differently? In the case of the People's Temple, Jim Jones's cult, where they went down to South America and there was a horrible mass suicide, he really felt he tried at first. He tried to do it in San Francisco. I mean, he emerged in the same place where the hippie moved, with the epicenter of the hippie movement. So it's no accident that that's where Jim Jones came out of, because in some ways, what was going on in the 60s was a little bit out of control.
Yeah.
So
you can look at also the story's kind of recently revived on Netflix on the new Tiger King Doc Antle kind of three-part episode, but they talk about a place called Yogaville, which is in the States, which was run by Swami Satchidananda from India, who was one of the openers, like kind of gave an opening speech at Woodstock. And he was later found out to be a perv. Mm. And there was all kinds of weird kind of child marriages and stuff going on in his, on his grounds.
Yogaville.
Yeah.
So what was he espousing as far as a religious doctrine?
Was, I mean, it was some, like a place that you can go and live a spiritual yogic lifestyle.
So it was rooted in was, some form of Hinduism.
Yeah.
Or,
and it was, you know, community with, you know, generations and kids and same like Osho's compound.
Right, right. And if people don't know who Osho was, he was in the Netflix documentary
Wild Country.
Mm-hmm. For anybody that doesn't know the story, it's a good way to find what, it's a good way to find out what the story was. Watch.
So then I think this kind of way of living got even more demonized in society.
The commune, the religious slash hippie slash commune slash dropping out.
I mean, it made a bad reputation for itself.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's for good reason. Another way to look at it, though, I just thought about this, is maybe a reason a lot of the people came to America to do this is because you do have religious freedom in America. The problem is that when you start stepping on the governmental stuff, the governance stuff, and oftentimes religion and government are in conflict. Mm-hmm. So what you can't do in America is have a religion that threatens too much of the government's control over you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're allowed to express it. You're allowed to practice it. But in America, it's like kind of this fine line. You're never fully allowed to detach.
Yeah.
So in some ways, that makes America one of the freest places and also one of the less free places, because the government always seems to have some kind of control over you. Anyway, that's a little bit of a digression. But yeah, so it made a bad name for itself, the whole dropping out. I mean, it's hard to even wrap our heads around what to call it. People call it the hippie movement. People say
dropout society?
Because
it applies to more than just, I don't know, Eastern knowledge, you know,
right,
it's any
right.
society that decides to try to be self-sustaining or live in a commune. Unfortunately, just during this period, there was this kind of psychopathic attitude going around in the United States. It's when you had all the serial killers. It's you had all these, I don't know, male, like, power crazy people doing, I mean, people are still doing crazy stuff, but it was just without the internet and stuff around, it was a lot easier to get away with weird stuff like that.
Well, you're absolutely right. I think that's an important part of the story, because I mean, you look at Ted Bundy, look at Dahmer, you look at the Manson murders. That was a very, very unique time with people that were behaving in ways that we never really saw before in a society. And there's a good Ted Bundy documentary all told from the perspective of his longtime girlfriend.
Mm.
I think they were engaged. But it gets into a lot of that it was, people have a kind of a theory that his murders were kind of a reaction to feminism. That actually in some way it was his like hatred of women, and the more kind of equality women were getting, the more say women were getting in society, that at some level that was a reaction. Ted Bundy doing what he did was trying to beat that back.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is. Okay. So go ahead.
It was a very strange time.
Neither of us were alive at that time, but I feel like both of us are pretty tuned in to the stories of the '60s and seventies. I hope so. We're doing a podcast all about it. So yeah, strange time. Go ahead though. Keep flowing.
Maybe that brings us to kind of where we are now, and where do these consciousness expanding societies or individuals, where do they reside? I mean, a lot of them reside here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, yeah, we're bringing it fully to our personal experience, because so much of that is right here on this little island. I think there are a few places in the world where you can really point to and say, oh, that's where a new kind of society is being built. This is definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Costa Rica, Portugal, there's places, you know, like Byron Bay in some ways on the east coast of Australia. There's places in California, There's places in other like more
West Coast America.
Yeah.
America probably too.
Yeah. There are little pockets in America where this is, people are trying to do it. And then elsewhere too. But
I think where we talk about this kind of power hungry, I mean, let's just call it what it is, ego.
Ego, you know, for
that
sure.
comes up in a lot of these situations. And I remember when I was in yoga school, which was like a couple of years ago, I went to India. I remember one of the things that stuck with me was that, because yoga school basically teaches you like the path to enlightenment and tells you that if you do enough yoga, you might get there in the end, which is what like the Yoga Sutras is about and a lot of the yogic philosophy is about. It's, you know, you're trying to reach enlightened state. And I remember very clearly that it said that once you get there, it's still not easy because this is the time when your ego can get the better of you. Mm. And they give you like a lot of warnings about it in the yogic texts that once you get all this knowledge and all this wisdom and can see through people and can read minds and all this kind of stuff, which potentially some of these gurus and, you know, the reason you get to this influential place is because you have some kind of power over people. And I remember very clearly that it said it's very easy to tip and start using those powers for yourself. Mm-hmm. And for your ego, to fuel your ego. And I think that is reflected in what happened in a lot of those kind of cult societies, but it is also reflective of what is happening now, you know, here. With the social media and with these kind of spiritual people being able to claim powers and claim ways they're going to make you millions and ways that they're going to make you have better sex or make you love yourself more. And there is a point where it stops being really to help people and it becomes ego, right?
Yeah. And I think we are fully there. Yeah. That's exactly it. That here, we'll just talk about our experience here because I think that's a good place for us to speak from. But I think a lot of people around the world can probably relate to this. We call it the Ubudian stereotype. I say that because it's just a quick shorthand to refer to what you're describing, the spiritual ego.
Just some context. Ubud is a place
in
Bali, which is featured in Eat, Pray, Love, I believe. And it's very much a place where people go to find healing. It is the kind of healing and spiritual center of this island for a long time with the Balinese, but it's also become that way for tourists, to come as
tourists,
a place
and expats and digital nomads. Right, exactly. Thank you for the background. So because of that, there are a lot of what we call Ubudians, which are the hyper-spiritual people that use spirituality as status, and a lot of people that are doing what Rushi was describing, which is taking this maybe newfound power that they think they have, or maybe that they do have, that they've acquired or refined along this spiritual path, and using it to enrich themselves, exploit others. Basically the same kind of like cultish mentality, the same kind of like pyramid scheme thing that we've seen many, many times, many instances of this, both in the religious world and in like the business world. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing kind of the mix of those two, religion and, or I should say, New Age spirituality and business. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because I see, you know, the Ubudians always talk about energy exchange, right? As a euphemism for paying them money. Because they mean, and on one hand, it's like, yeah, okay, I agree. It is an energy exchange. But, you know, oftentimes it's so explicitly used in that way to convince people, oh, you're not paying me a shitload of money to do something that's, you know, questionably beneficial for you. It's an energy exchange. Yeah. And I'm giving you my energy, so therefore it's worth it. And it's kind of sick for me to watch. Maybe my reaction.
It's like it's not a dropout because you're like, give me your money.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like it's money like, still exists. Right. Money still means something to me. Give me your money. I'm like halfway dropped out, but I still need your money.
Right.
You know. So
yeah, exactly. And there's, to be fair, it's hard to fully drop out. Remember, we're going to talk about this next episode. I don't want to talk about it too much, but I want to give people a little bit of a teaser. There is an awesome talk. I think it was like 1965 on Alan Watts's famous houseboat in Sausalito, which is just north of San Francisco, where he's talking to Timothy. It's Alan Watts, Timothy Leary, Allen Ginsberg, Gary Cohen, I think, which I didn't know Gary Cohen before, but he was like an old school beatnik that really was really deep in the original beatnik stuff, which was complete like bumming it, eating out of trash cans, like really dropping out. And in that talk,
it was like a monkish almost.
Yeah, it was like like monkish bum.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the exactly.
It was Dharma like monkish.
Yeah, Dharma bums, Jack Kerouac, Steinbeck, you know, all those guys. So, but what the reason I bring it up, and we don't have to talk about it too much, but in that, he, I think it was Gary Cohen, really challenges Timothy Leary, and he says to him, remember the clip? We'll play it. We'll probably play it next episode. But he basically tells him, you didn't drop out. You're like, you still have these complex speaking arrangements. You still make money. Like, you haven't dropped out. And Timothy, it's such a funny exchange because you can tell they've known each other for a long time. And Leary doesn't get offended or anything. He's like, he kind of like gives in to, I got to find out more about Gary Cohen because he must be a very influential dude if Timothy Leary was so willing to be like, yeah, sorry, Gary, you're right. Yes, I didn't drop out. I'm a fucking sellout. I'm a pussy. But getting to what you're saying with the Ubudians, they can only, all of us can only drop out so much unless we really go full in and say, I'm going to go live in the jungle. I'm going to just go and harvest my own food. Mm-hmm. I'm going to collect my own water.
Which is like so extremely passive if it's in terms of a revolution. You know,
it is kind of exactly. Yes. You're it's not the revolution
at all. I
want all
of society to change, and I'm going to change it by running away to the jungle. You know, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's a counterintuitive way of making a change, but
maybe
the way we got to do it.
I think that it's a good point, but maybe that is the way that we have to do it because by going and being in a completely blank canvas, so to speak. Then you can build it from the ground up, you know?
Yeah.
And so
and maybe if enough, I think the whole point is if enough people drop out of society, then society has to change. And that would be the way that the passive, you know, it's like reverse psychology. Like that would be the way that the passive side can win.
Right.
Is if.
Well, yeah. 'Cause if you have all the smartest, youngest, you know, brightest individuals leaving society, you have to incentivize them to come back. So if in some ways the society could say, okay, well, like we don't want any more people to leave, we'll adjust.
Or enough people are raised in that counter industrial movement that it then becomes the norm, you know, and that's just the slow and generational passive change. Because the second the passive side becomes aggressive in their pursuit, they are no longer passive.
Right. Yeah. That's what I mean. So, it's such a contradiction.
So
it is. It's so
dropping
good.
Out is I think what Timothy Leary meant as the smartest, path of least resistance.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a very good breakdown. You kind of, you went all around 360 around that whole dynamic and captured it really well. And I struggle with this. You know, I'm not in a position to say to the Ubudians that, oh, like I'm doing it too. I want to make money too. The difference though is the recognition. A lot of the people here want to hold it up as if like, oh, I'm really dropping out. And I look at them like, no, you're not. And that's what I love about you. I love about like our other group of friends, Carl, you know, all of them. They all kind of were all on the same page. Like, don't talk about it. Don't make that part of your identity. Like, actually fucking do it. You want to drop out? You want to really tune into this stuff? Then, oh, Rishi left your phone on. Just kidding. Then live it. And that's what I love about you guys and what we're doing here. So I guess that's the best you can hope for, right? Yeah. So we're at like 35 minutes right now. What do you think? You feel good about it? You think we gave people what they want?
I feel like we did some loop-de-loops and we came right the way back.
We came right the way back. But do we want to end it with, because we took a little digression away from Leary a little bit and Doss, but we can leave it with Leary's audio clip. Remember the one I played for you earlier that's about the divine process? Mm-hmm. I think it's really beautiful. And it, like you said earlier, it leads into next episode about Alan Watts.
Yeah.
So this is Timothy Leary at the same, I'm pretty sure it was the same talk at UCLA in 1967, but this is his perspective on God.
Man describes God at his own risk, but if it is to be described, it's closer to music. The divine process is a rhythm. It's a beat which continues manifesting itself in sequences over and over again, repetition. The same thing that's dancing in the stars, the same thing that's dancing inside the cells of your body, the same thing that's dancing inside the nucleus of the atom, the same problems of north, south, east, west, black, dark, invader, intrusion, escalation, water purification that we worry about at the political level. It's happening within every cell in your body. Indeed, every cell in your body is an organization of communication, defense, transportation, corruption, cleanliness, much more complicated than the city of New York. God's rhythm is expressed at every level of energy, and it's always sequence. It's always cycle. It's always doubling back on itself. Man,
sorry, clip repeated, but it's so good. It's so good, and it's very. It's what you were saying earlier, and it's definitely some Watts influence in there. He's talking like Alan Watts, which I love. So we can leave it there, or if you want to say anything about that, I think that Timothy Leary says it all with that.
I think we're going to have a few more episodes to talk about that.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
Also, a lot of it tunes into sacred geometry and all that kind of stuff, too. So
there's we'll so save it
for
many,
next time.
Yeah, there's so many things to talk about with that. But really, we'll just leave it at this idea that you've got to tune into that source, whatever you think it is, whether you call it God or universe, nature, whatever, all of it. Yeah. Tune into that and just go from there. See how you feel and join us with the dropping out, because that's a big part of it too. Right.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you for listening to What's What, where we revive the philosophy and literature at the heart of the counterculture movements of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, taking a critical look at societal norms and exploring sustainable and earth-conscious alternatives to the industrialized systems that rule modern life. What do you think? Is that good?
Yeah.
Nice. Also on this podcast feed is Vias Radio, music plus talk show available exclusively on Spotify, where you can listen to tunes from across the spectrum of independent music. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Vias Media for visual and written content. And that's it. Thanks, Roosh.
Thanks.
See you soon.